Welcome. If you are looking for a story, a dose of the stranger than fiction side of the world we live in, then you have come to the right place. There are a lot of stories here to choose from, and today's is a new story, a story that takes place in Italy, and we were on a top secret mission. I know a lot of you are stuck at home wondering about where the world is going, and I'm here to tell you that although it seems like the world has come to a complete stop, there are a lot of things still going on. Things I've been contacted about, jobs I won't even go do right now, but still, they're out there. The job I'm about to tell you about today took us to Italy, but really it was more like we stopped by because we were already trying our best to get home right when things in the world started changing. For this job, we ended up in a place that was once a refuge, and then it became home to at least 100,000 deaths. And we were there because someone went missing, and this place was like none other, and they needed to be found. This job dealt with missing persons, though, right? This does happen. So why the desperate call to us for the help? Well, that's because it is illegal to even be there in the first place, for some extraordinary reasons. It's definitely a place people should fear, and we were about to find out why firsthand. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. Today is the story of finding lost lives, lost souls, on Pavelia, an island of death. Take a listen and enjoy. So, okay, the world is falling apart. We're on the very edge of everyone being told to stay home, and we are trying to get home. And there's this case of missing persons, and they need us to help them find them. But why? It sounds a bit confusing at first, but the minute I saw the note pop in, I knew exactly why. Those missing were lost on Pavelia Island, a place with a major history. Maybe you've heard of it. It's known to be haunted. It's been on more than one paranormal show. Most don't even want to go there. However, some do try to sneak in there anyway. And that's what happened here. If you are found there, by the way, you will be arrested, which doesn't, of course, stop people from trying to go there, which usually turns out to be unfortunate for them. I mean, no sharing of experiences, write-ups, or any scary stories will stop those that just have to see. For someone to go missing, the people that know the island know that they have most likely vanished from that common plane we all live on. Does it mean they have completely perished, been taken down in some brutal attack, and are now buried or worse on the island? No, that's not what those that know know. Let me give you a little history about this place. The island is located down from Venice, just off Lido, in northern Italy. All of it looking out onto the Adriatic. And if you're a listener, you know that we have been to the Adriatic before. As I've said, this is an island, and it used to be protected. All the entrances were protected and guarded by these four octagon structures. And if you look at pictures of it now, you'll see that there's only one left. A long time ago, a very, very long time ago, the island was a place where maritime travelers went for refuge. Then, in 421, it opened up to others, men, women, their kids, also for refuge. For them, it was from those brutally invading the mainland. And those people lived there for a while, but that all eventually fizzled out, and then the island was abandoned. Then, the people of the mainland were invaded again, but this time it was by an illness, the bubonic plague. It hit Venice in 1348. And what did those in charge decide to do? They decided to quarantine those that were affected. It's seen as the best way to stop the spread, right? Well, either way, that's what they did, and anyone affected by the plague was sent to the island. You know, if you got sick and you got sent there, you'd been given a death sentence. And people tried to protest, but in the end, if you were sick, you were put over there, left to die, and then you would be burned. And if you got sick and got away with it in Venice, and then you died, you would be sent over and burned as well. Get rid of the sickness, you see. That was the theme. And this didn't only happen one time. Now, after that all went away, it happened again in 1630 when the city was yet again invaded with the plague, or the Black Death, as you otherwise might know it. There were so many taken there and so many that were dying that they had to burn the bodies. I mean, they couldn't bury them all. And that explains why they say 50% of what makes up the ground of Pavilia is made up of human ashes. I mean, that should say something. But eventually, this all goes away too, and the island was used to store military supplies. They took that chance even though the scary tales were already starting. But then again, the military also kind of relied on that. The island would be too scary to be invaded. And that did last for a while. But after that all went away, then what? Well, you transform it into an insane asylum, of course. Yep, that's what happened. This was in the late 1800s, and at that time, anyone that was mentally disturbed, they were sent to the island to live. And these patients, if you want to call them that, they weren't exactly tended to. They weren't working towards any solutions or healing. Instead, they were really being sent there to be sent away. And as it all has been told, the doctors not only didn't help these patients, they kind of did what they pleased. One doctor in particular, he went to the extreme, working his bizarre experiments on these people. And all of that eventually only led to his own madness, which ended in his suicide. He jumped off the bell tower. And today those bells are still heard on the island, or so they say. And when the asylum went away, the island then eventually went to the elderly. They converted the whole thing into a geriatric center. But now all of that is gone too. The island is once again abandoned and has been for a while now. It is illegal to go there, but like I said, people do. There have also been attempts to get money for the island, use it, profit from it, work on it, rebuild it. But none of those deals ever worked out. And I'll leave you to your own imagination on that one. Maybe someday it will change, but from what we saw, those Venetians are going to have to do some real hard work, spiritual and otherwise, to clean up the place. And if they do, they will most likely never tell you how they did it. It will just be alive someday, and oh, the rumors will fly. So that is Pavilia's history in a nutshell. Now on to this job that we did. Not all that long ago, actually. This was an unfortunate case with some very unique things happening. First of all, I'm contacted by a man who I will refer to as Mr. Rossi. And we're all traveling at that time, remember, but I get this request, and with everything going on, the only reason I even opened the request at the time I got it was because I recognized his name. Mr. Rossi is part of a collective group of agencies that handles Italy's intelligence. He's part of the AISE, and that is the External Intelligence and Security Agency. And that's how I know him. I've worked with him before. And that's why I'm interested, and that's why I want to do this job for him. But I need to let you know right now, right off the bat, that Mr. Rossi was not trying to abuse any power here or put any pressure on me or my team. He's a good man, and he was looking to me for a favor. And in the business that we're in, a lot of times you do the work you do, you work really hard, and you make the money you do. But there are a lot of jobs where you just go do them without any compensation. And in this case, that's important because, number one, I would just return the favor because Mr. Rossi has helped me out on more than one occasion, while in Italy and outside of Italy. And also, another reason he needed to reach me was because he had no one else to turn to. He is a part of the higher-ups situation in Italy, and for what he was dealing with, it wouldn't look really good for him if he was dumping a lot of money and resources into something which, to be honest, would reflect badly on him. Because things like that just do when you're talking about anyone of importance. And also during a time when things were starting to really fall apart around the world, the number of people that you could count on in the first place was dwindling. And as with pretty much every client I take on, they need someone they can trust. Because without that trust, nothing's going to work. You need someone who you know to be reliable. Because a lot of the time, there's only one shot at something, or one way in and one way back, and that's it. And let's face it, when you're desperate, you want someone that you personally feel like you can count on. And so that's why all of that is why Mr. Rossi came to me. So what is the request exactly? Mr. Rossi is an intelligence official, but he's also a person trying to live a life. And like many officials, he has a family that makes it into the spotlight from time to time. So people know him and they know his children. He has four kids, all really great, all boys, all doing well. But one, the second oldest, has made a mistake. Mr. Rossi, just to give you some background, started his family when he was younger, just like his path to his now career. He's a very focused person who knows what he wants, and he doesn't see any reason to waste any time, pretty much on anything. He wants to get where he wants to get. He's not an old guy. He's got a beautiful wife. His sons are 21, 19, and then he has twins that are 15. The 21-year-old no longer lives at home. He's moved on and doing his own thing. And the 19-year-old has stayed back in the home for a little while longer because he has some projects that he's working on and a business he's trying to start. Three of Mr. Rossi's kids are just like he is. They're very focused and they want to go into careers or have expressed opinions about and showing signs of going down a path that's not that far removed from where Mr. Rossi is. Now, the second oldest son is of a different mind. He is the creative one. He's tried many things, but one thing that is a little bit successful, and he also had a show on YouTube, which for the time being has been taken down because of what happened, but he was doing really well. And what his particular interest is, and what his YouTube and social media videos and everything were about, was the paranormal. We all know how popular that is. He really wanted to be the next Zach Bagans. And guess who actually went to Pavalia Island? Zach Bagans. And so if he did it, so could Tommaso. That's the name I will use for Mr. Rossi's second son. The issues? Well, the obvious. It's illegal to go there. And what parent wants their kid doing anything illegal? Mr. Rossi is a highly regarded man, and he doesn't need the humiliation of his son getting caught or trying to get in. He would expect the respect of how he was raised and who his father is, and would hopefully avoid this situation altogether, the situation he's now in. They even talked about Pavalia. And then, of course, there's the healthy fear that people of this area in Italy have of the island overall. A lot of the people that try to get onto the island are from somewhere else. They want to be seen on screen. They want to record everything. They want to go to this abandoned and scary and illegal place, right? They want the thrill and they want to be known for it. But you actually would need special permission from the government to go there, which is obviously what the Ghost Adventures did to be able to film their show. However, Tommaso didn't think that it was that important to get that approval, and he went anyway. So what happened? Mr. Rossi tells me about how his son went there and is now missing. And he tells me all of this in the request with a few details. But it's when I stop by, I get the full story. His son and his partner in crime for the paranormal series, a friend I will call Christian, left in the evening two nights before we got there. So you have to realize that the timing of this was incredible because we were stuck overseas and we were trying to get home. But if we were not right there at that very time that we were, we would not have been able to help with this. And if I would have seen it later and found out that Tommaso was never found, it would have been a very sad day for me. So Tommaso and Christian left the Rossi home, letting everyone know that they would be home by morning. They were going on a spook hunt, and Tommaso always did these during the night, so this was nothing new. Him coming home the next morning was nothing new either. So everything was as it should be. They had no reason to be nervous or think anything strange about it. But Tommaso doesn't come home. And as the time passes the next morning, they start making phone calls. They're not overly paranoid parents, but he did have commitments that morning, and so they're starting to wonder what's going on. Plus, they realize that Tommaso never told them exactly where their research was being conducted. Well, after making some of those calls and looking around through some things in his room and what have you, they realize that he did what they did not want him to do. They went to Pavelia. And the next evening, like it was on cue, strange things and weird things started happening in the Rossi home. For instance, even though everyone was gathered at that time around discussing what had been going on, they're deciding whether they should call the authorities, Mrs. Rossi notices that Tommaso's favorite glass and plate, which she had set out for him at lunchtime with the hopes that he'd be home for her to fill that plate and glass, they were no longer in the dining room. She quickly gets up and starts walking around, and she finds them in the sink. Now, they were never used, so they're not dirty. They're still clean, aside from the fact that they're moved by who knows who. It's strange because it's as if they had been washed and dried, and I'm talking the old-fashioned way, which is how Mrs. Rossi liked to do things most of the time because she's old-fashioned. But anyway, it's as if they were washed and dried, and both the glass and the plates are now set out to dry on the counter. On top of how weird all of that is, what really freaked out Mrs. Rossi and why she screamed and actually fell to her knees in the kitchen was that Tommaso, he was more rebellious than the other boys, and it came out in different ways, small ways. Small ways like helping with the dishes. When he would help with the dishes, instead of putting the glasses upside down on the drying rack like his mother wanted, he would set them upright. He thought that was better. They would be on a towel to the left of the drying rack, sitting there like a regular glass. It's a small thing, but if you think about it, why is it set out like their missing son would do it? And how did all this happen in the first place? It would freak anybody out. And just try to imagine the motherly instinct that was happening at that moment. Not good. I mean, she was so shocked and wigged out by the whole thing that she did. She literally fell to the floor. She reached for the glass, though, right before she fell, and it fell with her, and it crashed to the floor. And that's when Mr. Rossi and everyone else that was there came rushing into the kitchen. So now everyone is thinking that there's something weird going on. They're no longer just stuck in the, well, maybe he got hurt. Maybe someone needs to go and find him. Maybe they're on their way back. You're starting to get a little overwhelmed, and it's pretty immediate that there's more to whatever it is because of all the horror stories around Pavelia. And remember, they've been living with these stories their entire life, so it's not a big reach for them, you know, for their heads to go there. Now, I'm not going to go into every little tiny thing that happened between that afternoon and when I arrived because there were just so many little things, you know, things with Tommaso's closet, things with his bed, his toothbrush, just a lot of things that were not right. And after that first afternoon of going through any of it, Mr. Rossi was ready for some help, and he put together his request and he sent it to me. In meeting with him and the missus, they share more about their beliefs around Pavelia Island. It's a belief that should people go there, they are at risk for getting stuck in between where we are in this life and where people go to in the afterlife. The in-between is where all the people that died there unfairly, alone, sick, and as prisoners are now. And they're agitated and they're angry. And there are a lot of them. The theory is that they will continue to take new souls for every soul that was stolen, because in their eyes, that's what happened. Does anyone have the right to take a law-abiding citizen from their life, ill or not? They're angry. That's the theory. Now, if you want to find an official number of how many people have already gone missing on this island, good luck. But I'm here to tell you that it's not even close to the 100,000 to 200,000 that died there. So they still have a lot of work to do if they want to reach their goal. Some people believe, and of course, some do not. But for those that do, for everyone that does get lost over there and they find out about it, it only raises their fears even more and confirms their commitment to stay away. Now, there are some that don't care either way. They will be more than happy to get you over there on their little boat and wish you good luck. And there you have it. an interesting story already about this island, some history to take in, and then we have this family, this hurting family that knows it's very unlikely, first, to get anyone to go over there to even try to find their son, and two, if they've been taken to the in-between, how many people are out there really that could go in, try to get them? So there we were. And since we were all traveling together, the entire team is together in Italy. I went to that meeting by myself, and on my way back to where we were temporarily staying, I did a lot of thinking about who should come with me. But there's no doubt in my mind, pretty much from the beginning, that it should be all of us. And when I get there, the team agrees. If someone did have an opinion about it other than that, we would all be willing to listen because at the end of the day, we all trust each other. A trust thing again. And nobody fights to be on top and nobody gets jealous of the other one. That's simply just a waste. We are there to do a job. And if the job is accepted, we do what is best to get it done. And for this job, that means all of us go. Because we're limited already, if you think about it. With everything going on, it's not like we could just call on and rely on any of our usual contacts everywhere. So we had only what we had with us already. We wouldn't be getting any more specific supplies for what was needed on this job, which was the paranormal. And we only had a light set of paranormal tools with us, unfortunately. The job we had done originally, the one that we had left to do before and that we completed, we thought we might need some paranormal tools and supplies, but we were fairly certain that we would not. So we didn't bring very many, which means now that we are here to do this job, we don't have all that we would normally have. But with travel restrictions, not being able to get around or have anyone get you anything really, we could only work with what we had. At 1 a.m., we leave the Rossis and head over to the island. We're there to do the job. We don't need to investigate Mr. Rossi because we know everything about him already, so it's just time to get going. Tommaso is in the in-between. He's not going anywhere, but he doesn't need to be there very long either because they're most likely draining him of all his energy and working on his mind, and if we wait too long, he might not come out the same, or he may not want to come back at all. We've seen way too much of this stuff, and if someone kidnaps your soul, they're going to want to keep it, because it provides them power. The island's close, really. A lot of times we end up traveling for a while to get to where we need to, but not this time. The biggest challenge here is getting out of the city without anyone really noticing or seeing us, and we certainly don't want anyone to know where we're going. And we've been through that routine a million times, so we take our time, we're careful, and then before we know it, we're on our way. The moon was very bright, shining down on us as we trekked on over, but it was eerily dark the minute we stepped onto the island. And I don't mean just because, you know, the moon was reflecting from the water before or something like that. It was seriously dim. And in all our minds, this was a part of the angry spirits and whatever influence they had over the island. It's so that whoever tries to invade their space, they lose some of their ability to navigate. There was absolutely something going on that seemed to be coming from above and beyond. You could feel it the minute you got there. And their tactic was effective. It was definitely harder to see. But lucky for us, we had our headlamps. We have some night vision. So we flip on our lamps and we forge forward. As we walk, we can hear sounds all around us. Some of it was birds that we interrupted, and maybe some other little guys running about. But the shuffling in the weeds, around the trees, and through the brush, it was definitely not any kind of animal. It was something else. We go a bit further, and then Ryder says, "They're all here, you know. They're all here." And that caused a slight pause in all of us as we went. With Ryder's background, she senses these types of things a little bit better than the rest of us. But we're almost to the main building, so that pause doesn't last long. When we get to the building, you can't miss how covered it is with foliage. Leaves and branches of all types, everywhere. It's growing up the walls. It's growing through to the inside. I mean, we were just stunned. Even Jagger. And remember, he's seen a lot, worked against a lot of bad people in his old days in the outback as a tracker. He stopped, and he was just in awe. It was the feeling of the place, along with how it looked or what was left of it. You just knew. Bad things happened there. and there were bad things there still. And then, instantly, new things started happening. You know, like the dark filter over the moonlight when we got off the boat? Pretty much right after we got inside of the building, we started hearing more noises outside of the building. And Harley adds her two cents, and she's spot on, that the evil that is there is trying to confuse us, but we don't take the bait. We keep moving around the leaves and branches and things growing through the ceiling, things on the floor. Of course, there's graffiti on the wall because, you know, people can't seem to help themselves. But we're just kind of looking around and taking it slow when all of a sudden this big chunk of the ceiling drops down right in front of Frankie, who is leading the way down this narrow corridor. He stops, so we all stop and take a moment, and we just look around and take it all in. And I didn't mention this before, but it's been said that this place is also booby-trapped. To keep people away, they would put booby traps everywhere so that the word would get out that it was unsafe to be there. So we have to be on a constant lookout for anything yet unsprung or untriggered. We're dipping down small hallways. We're looking around old rooms. Everything's a mess. There's a lot of equipment there too. Most of it supported the building itself, but there's also other things. And that was also something really strange to take in. Something that you wouldn't see today, for instance. Today, when a building is sold and someone takes it, nowadays they take it for their purpose and they make it into something else. You know, something that's maybe not just a regular office building. They take it, they renovate it, at least a little bit. But that was not the case here. It's almost like what was going on this island didn't matter so much that nobody bothered removing things like the large bathtubs that the different groups of people used over and over again. There were tons and tons of old metal beds, and no doubt they just kept the same beds here throughout all of it. And think about that. Plague beds. Sure, some of the things could have been used in multiple situations, okay, but still, it's pretty morbid that it appears that everything stayed the same throughout this whole process of this building changing purposes and everything that went on here. The items that really gave us the creeps, though, were the mental asylum items. And we've definitely been in more than one old asylum in our days of this work. But it never ceases to amaze any of us, the stuff that we see, because of how disturbing it all is. Seems like everyone got the memo back then on really how to torture someone, even in the very, very early days. We didn't see things that would have to do with lobotomies, for instance, or things like that, because that all came later. But there were those large baths, like I mentioned, used to ice people and torture them for hours in the cold water. There were old and rusty restraints and old shackles, restraint chains on walls and hooked to some of the metal beds. We found an old wooden box full of lancets and fleams, which, if you don't know what those are, they're two types of little knives. Basically, they were used to let the blood out of the patients where they thought they had too much of something or something else. So they would let the blood out of them to try to balance them out. It was called bloodletting. And I don't know about you, but I don't need anyone doing that to me anytime soon. And those are just some of the things we saw. But there were also things that were happening to us while we're moving about this building. Like, both Scarlett and I felt something or someone brush their fingers through our hair as we walked by, and Frankie noted heavy breathing around him. Then there was Jagger. He kept thinking that he saw something moving. I remember, for instance, he thought that he saw this big bunch of gnats around him. And then there was another time that he thought he saw this animal crawling in front of him, and he explained it to be like a giant squirrel. And he was physically reacting to these things. Like, he'd be back against the wall or he'd be flailing his arms. We even saw, all of us saw this, an old light. It was a service light that was broken, mind you. We saw it flicker. But none of that was true. None of it was real. It was all meant to intimidate us and scare us. But we are staying focused, and so far no one's gotten hurt. Over time, we've gotten a lot better about training our minds to realize that something is false and it's being put on us. It's not actually happening to us. And so we just keep doing what we're doing regardless of what we're hearing and seeing. We get to the part of the building where it becomes two levels. And that's when we decide to split up. Yep, just like in the movies, where you'd be yelling at the screen right now, yelling at us, telling us not to split up. That's exactly what we did. The place was simply too big for us to get to all of it in the time we were trying to do it. We wanted to scope out what was going on, so we split into two groups. Our goal was to gather any information, anything we might see or find, and then meet back up under what was once the bell tower, where the doctor threw himself to his death, although some people say he was pushed. At the time of this decision, we are in one of those main corridors. There's this huge beat up and falling apart staircase behind us, just so you can picture it. Harley, Frankie, and I head up the stairs. Ryder, Scarlett, and Jagger take the main level. We will continue exploring forward until we reach that bell tower, or what used to be the bell tower, which is on the other end. Now, on top of seeing things that you might find in an asylum, we are trying to find something. We're trying to get to the source of the nuisance that has been bothering us. We want to find out where they're holding Tommaso and Christian. And we actually start calling out their names, like you might be looking for someone lost in a woods or even playing a game of hide and seek. We're calling out to Tommaso. We're also calling out to Christian over and over again. We can hear the team downstairs doing the same. We're also calling out to the spirits, letting them know that we're coming for them, letting them know that we're not leaving without what we came for. We want them to know that we're serious and that we're not afraid. And this obviously hit a nerve because after a few minutes of us making this ruckus, the weather outside started to get nasty. And there are no windows really on anything anymore, so this nasty weather is now coming into the building. And it's getting in our way a little bit. Leaves are flying all around. There's branches that are being disturbed and flown about. More debris falls in front of Harley, Frankie, and I. So we get around that and we're looking around. Harley heads into one of the rooms, the side rooms, to check out the weather a little bit closer. And the door slams behind her. And the spirits, this evil entity, whatever it is, they're able to hold it shut for a good 5 minutes. But we do eventually get it open. This should all be disturbing, right? But to us, it's making us feel good because the closer we get to the bell tower, the more angry these spirits or this entity seems to be. And that tells us that we're heading in the exact right direction. So we keep going until suddenly we are interrupted by the screams of Scarlett. She's a level below where we are, remember, with Ryder and Jagger. And make note also that I just have to say this in the middle of this story because I'm cutting this experience down by quite a bit so that I can fit it all into a reasonable story time. I just wanted you to know that, you know, a lot happened in this building, but that kind of tells you what our experience is so far up to this point. But okay, so we've gone through a lot of the rooms and we're actually almost to the end. So we just skip the rest upstairs and we rush to the stairs, head downstairs to find out what's going on with Scarlett. Outside, the rain is falling even harder now, and the lightning is striking in what feels like every 2 seconds, and the thunder was so loud, I swear I've never heard thunder that loud before. And in the midst of it all, we're getting soaked, right? Anyway, we go downstairs only to find Scarlett smashed up against a wall. Her body's facing the wall with her head to the side. Picture if, you know, a big, strong, tough guy had slammed her up against that wall and was holding her there. And the really disturbing part of all of it is that you could actually see imprints of what I'm guessing would be hands just under her shoulders on her back. You know, something was there. And to our major surprise, when the three of us got downstairs, we see two young men that are on the floor in the open room to the right of Scarlett. They're on the ground in the corner, their legs are out, their arms are to the sides, they're slouched down and their heads are down. I'm looking at them, and sure enough, it's Tommaso and Christian. And Jagger explains that as soon as they saw the boys, that's when Scarlett was attacked. We were getting too close to the situation. We don't want to touch the boys. We don't want to do anything with them because we're going to get their spirits back. We're going to get their souls. So we're going to need these bodies exactly as they were when they left them. We find Frankie and Ryder. They're standing on either side of Scarlett. And now we've all come down, so we're all there. It's right then that even through the rain and thunder, we start to hear the voices. They're talking, but in a whisper. And there are a lot of them. It's like a very large mumbling crowd that's right there with us. It's all around us, but we see no one. The only thing we can see are the pushed-in hands on Scarlett's back. Ryder's telling us that it's a collective. There's a lot of them. They're all present. She senses all the pain in their voices, and we can all hear that pain. When Scarlett lets out another scream, it is clear that whoever has a hold on her is pushing her even harder, and this is all happening in a matter of seconds. So right after we get in the situation, I'm diving down and getting into my pack, trying to pull out some of our tools. But before I even get into anything, Frankie just yells out a big no, and he rushes Scarlett. And when he gets to her, it's like he bumped into something, and there's this large puff of, I want to say smoke, but that's not what it was. It was something that looked like you could almost reach out and grab it, more of a solid. It stays there for a microsecond, but Frankie can't quite get a hold of Scarlett while it's there. But it puffs up finally, and then Frankie can continue forward, and he grabs Scarlett from the wall, and she just falls to her knees. She's upset, but she's telling us, you know, she's okay, everything's okay. And then she asks us if we could hear what he said. And we're thinking, you know, the mumbling voices, but she says, no, the man's voice, his heavy breathing in her ear and his low grunting. The voice actually told her he was glad we were there. This is another form of intimidation. Whatever this thing is, it wants us so scared that we will give in, that we are actually caught already. He wants us to believe that, when in fact we are not. The thunder's still going, the rain is still falling, and without us even noticing, the mumbling voices, they're just gone all of a sudden. There one minute, gone the next. Scarlett takes Jaeger's hand and she gets to her feet. She takes in a few big breaths, reassures us again that she's okay. Whatever is there is moving in on us, and we have to get to that bell tower. It's not far. That's where we're going to go, raining and thundering or not. We only have one more small hallway to get to through before we can get out the back door. So if you can imagine, we're in this rush, we're all half soaked, and we're all ready to barge through this door, and we're preparing ourselves for all the rain and lightning and the mess outside. But when we open that door, everything's different. It literally was like we opened the door to another time, another place. There was no more rain or thunder. It's not the middle of the night either. When we walk out that door, it's like very late in the evening, like it will be dark soon, but not quite yet. We all look at each other and we turn around, we're looking at the building, and it's no longer old. It's no longer falling apart. The foliage is not all over the place. The windows aren't broken. We have somehow stepped back in time or on another plane. Clearly, this evil spirit that is here has accepted that we are not giving up our fight. So this would be step one of it inviting us into its world. For Tommaso and Christian, it probably wasn't like this. Instead, they probably took to that intimidation, got scared. Then they got sucked up without even realizing what was happening before it was too late. For us, on the other hand, the game is on. The low whispers and mumbling like we heard inside, they start to happen again all around us. They're faint, but deep. We're at the base of the bell tower now. Above the mumbling, and a bit louder, we hear a laugh. It's almost like a growl laugh, or maybe that grunt that Scarlett was talking about. It was hard to describe. It wasn't just like your deep, evil laugh. There was more to it. And that's when Ryder puts her hands out and she's thinking, like taking it all in. And then she says in a low voice, she tells us what she's thinking. She's in the zone, right? So we all stop and we all just listen. And she tells us, it's not everyone. And at first we're not sure what she means, but she continues. She lets us know that it's not everyone that has been buried here that is upset and taking souls. It's just the one. And she tells us it's the doctor. The doctor who did in fact throw himself from the bell tower. She said she can see it. She's getting a vision of it. He is the one who is angry. After he went mad, he stayed mad on the other side. He was still mentally ill. He is the one collecting souls for every soul that is buried here. Then she opens her eyes and looks up at all of us and she says, we're not up against all of them. We're up against the one. But she warns us that his power is fierce. She can feel it. He is strong. She tells us he can feel his energy all around us. And so with this information, it helps us, but we also realize how powerful this one entity is. We need to respect that. We put our heads together and we make a plan quick. Harley obviously knows a lot about the madmen of the world and knows that to beat them at their own game, we need to be relentless. In a situation like this, we're unsure of what exactly is going to happen to us, right? What is going to be put on us now? How are we going to be affected, or how are they going to try to affect us? But we have to be collective ourselves. Stay strong as a group. Stay focused, like we've had to do on many other jobs. Whatever we think we see or feel is not really happening to us. It will be a mind game. And to pull out Tommaso and Christian, we need to win that game. First, we make note that we're not dealing with someone that is suffering from demonic possession, for instance. We're dealing with a mentally ill person, possibly schizophrenic and delusional, and we will treat him that way. We could break out some of our fancy paranormal supplies that we brought, but this time, we feel something else is best. We're going to take a different approach. We're going to perform a seance of sorts. If you don't know, seance, you know, to perform a seance isn't just to contact the people that you miss or your long-lost dog, right? They can also be used to contact evil spirits. And we will be using the energy between us, all of us, to do just that, a group channeling. Right now, this evil entity has a hold of both Tommaso and Christian, and we will be working to get him to release that hold. While this entity has a hold on them, they most likely feel unaware and empty. Scarlett breaks out the two pictures that we brought with us, one of Tommaso and one of Christian that we got from the Rossis. We're in front of the bell tower, and we sit in a circle with the two pictures in the middle. No one can actually confirm the name of this doctor, so without taking any chances based on what people think or what the rumors are, we choose to call him Doctor. He knows who he is. We take each other's hands and we close our eyes. We start channeling our own energy through each other. And after a couple minutes, I start calling out to the doctor. He's ill and confused, and at Harley's advisement, we treat him as such. So we present ourselves as if we are on his side. We understand him. I work on him for a while, and when I finally feel that inner connection to this entity, he's accepted my communications, I squeeze both my hands, and then the next person does, etc., right? So that this is our way of communicating. I'm letting everyone know I've made the connection. And then once that happens, Ryder takes it on the other side. She starts calling out to Tommaso and Christian. Again, they're probably in a state where they're unaware of what exactly is happening to them. So we need to connect to them so they can start to realize where they are and they can start to connect back down to their bodies here on the island. And we go at this for a while, you know, me on the doctor, Ryder on the boys. And eventually we get the hand squeeze out from Ryder that she has made her connection. This is a huge win, because they are basically powerless over there, or they have been powerless. So we're starting to get some of them back. Her feelings get stronger and stronger. And then, it's not long, when the entity reaches out to all of us. And suddenly, in all this good stuff that's happening, we feel the force around our necks. Someone has a hold on us. It's like they're squeezing our necks. And if you could see us all sitting there in a circle, all our heads would be flown back at that moment, and we're starting to struggle to breathe. This is where the doctor is in his final fight. And I do my best. I'm trying to stay focused while I'm coughing, still calling out to the doctor. I'm explaining to him that we're on his side, that we understand his pain, things like that. Ryder keeps communicating with Tommaso and Christian the best she can. And after a little while, we're all talking to the doctor. People are shouting things out every time they have a chance to breathe, basically. Our goal is to overwhelm him. And eventually, we do. The hold on us is released. We're all still holding hands very tightly now. And when we open our eyes, we're all coughing, we start to see that same sort of puff of smoke, or whatever that was, come up from the ground, the same one we saw with Frankie. And it starts swirling around up and up through the dirt, and it's flying in the middle of all of us, like a small little cyclone or tornado, and it just keeps rising up. It's making a big mess. We feel the wind on our faces, but eventually it dissipates into the air and everything is silent. And now we're all looking over to Ryder to see if she knows anything. You know, she was the one in the connection with the boys, so what she says is, they are here. With a little bit of struggle, because we're all lightheaded at this point, we're even in a little bit of shock, we get to our feet and we start heading back to the building to get inside to check on the boys we came for. And sure enough, to our huge relief, they're moving just a little bit. They're completely disoriented. They have no memory of what happened. Tommaso actually throws up. We had to stay there probably for a good 45 minutes before we could even think of moving them at all. And as for me and the team, our hearts are racing also. This entity definitely did touch us on the inside. And if you've never had that happen, it's an invasion. Everything around this island seems to have to do with invasion. And he invaded us, but collectively with our strength and energy and focus, we were able to build a wall where he couldn't get in far enough to actually affect us or affect our minds. It was something extraordinary to be a part of. And I don't think any story can really even do it justice, but I'm sharing what I can and just letting you know it was something. Now, did we rid the island of the doctor? No, we did not. That would have to be a job for another day, another time. By the time we're done with everything, it's night again, right? Because it was almost dark when we started all of this outside. When we get back to our boat, Frankie actually pulls out his satellite watch. Yep, time and GPS actually delivered satellite, but it's the only way for us to really know for sure what time it is. And what was nice to know is that we are back to what time should have been, which is approaching 5 a.m. So somewhere in our travels back to the boat, we entered our own time. The mainland isn't far. We get back to safety, and there aren't enough people to even notice us. And by 6:30, we're back at the Rossies. For the family, this whole experience only reiterates the fact that when something is deemed illegal because of what goes on there, there might be a reason for that. We were at the Rossies for a little bit after that job was done. Mr. Rossi and I had a ton to catch up on, and the team enjoys him as well, and we were still trying to figure out how to get home. Tommaso plans on starting up a series again, but everything's shut down for now. I really hope he does. It'd be great to see that. And then our challenge to get back to America continued on. And I could go on and on about that, but this was about Plague Island. The story revolves entirely around power, segregation, and isolation. And in the end, nature will never stop, and neither will the evildoers. It will come around, but the world always survives. Italy is a beautiful place with beautiful people, but it too is not immune. I hope you all can remember that we live in one world, and things can happen to any of us wherever we are in the same way. How we handle it can make all the difference in the end. I really hope you enjoyed the job and the story today. Not exactly sure where all the stories are going, but check back for more. Things are a little crazy right now, so I can't guarantee any kind of schedule, but I do love sharing with you guys, and I hope we can get more to listen and realize there's more out there than the day-to-day lives we live, the small things we enjoy, as well as the things we try to avoid. Life is real. But keep at it and keep going. Thank you for listening, and until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.